Bonjour, bonjour, bonjour. Welcome to the SBS Cycling Podcast. I'm Christophe Mallet and I'm your host. And today it's a special edition of this podcast this week because we have the, what I would say, one of the greatest, if not the greatest, Australian cyclist on two wheels at the minute. It's Amanda Spratt. Are you Spratty?
Well, Christophe, thank you. Yeah, this is the real reason I came on the pod, actually, for that kind of introduction. I might actually just play that to myself every morning. Bit of positive affirmation to start my day, but that's fantastic. Thanks.
I can do ringtones if you want as well. That's the thing I can do.
Even better. I'll pay for that. Woo.
So it's always fantastic to have you in our program because I know you are a real fan of cycling, and actually you are also listening to, you and your mum actually are listening to this podcast, I believe.
Sprat_L on Twitter, yeah. I think it is. But we're big fans of the pod, and yeah, as you said, I'm just a huge fan of cycling through and through. It's in my blood, so I love the work you guys do, and you're big supporters of me and Australian cycling, so it's always a pleasure to come on and chat.
Thank you, Ali. Stop the self-promotion for us, but let's talk about you. How is it all going for you? Is the purpose of this podcast and this chat is to just, you know, take a minute to talk to you and then see how you're going. There's a big commitments. We talked about it before, you and I. There's big commitments coming in and around Paris. There's also the Tour de France. There's a lot of ambition for you this year. Where are you at?
Yeah, so I mean, currently right now I'm in the Dolomites in San Pellegrino on an altitude training camp with Lidl Trek. So we have, I guess, the climber group here with Guy Riley, Neely Solanco, Bocchini, Brody Chapman and me. So we're here doing sort of a 2-week block in the mountains with an eye to the Tour of Swiss, which comes up after this, the Nationals for the Europeans, and then onto the Giro. So that's kind of where I'm at right now, training quite hard. And obviously, I had the first part of the season, which went through until Vuelta Itzulia and had a break. And now this is kind of the build up into the second half of the season.
It's quite interesting because we talked with Maka actually in a podcast, I think it was last week or a week before. But we focus a lot on France. We focus a lot on Paris, the Olympics, the Tour de France. But let's not forget the Tour de France men is starting in Florencia. But the Giro is also pretty much the same in the same time as well for you. So there's a big European focus on Italy as well. And how important is the Giro for you, for the outfit, for you as an athlete as well?
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think Italy, it's just, yeah, it's with cycling. It's so much tradition and so much history in Italy and cycling. And for us, to be honest, the Giro was sort of the first grand tour that I sort of was involved in when I came through as a young rider. I think I did my first Giro when I was 18 years old, and so I've always seen it as our big grand tour. Of course, we now have the Tour de France Femme, which has changed the landscape for sure. That's now the biggest race on the calendar, but the Giro is always a really important one. And I think I've had the honor of wearing the Maglia Rosa. I've had a stage win, so for me it always has a special place in my heart. I also started my career in Italy. I lived in Varese for many years, so on a personal level, Italy has a really special place in my heart, and it's just always a fun place to race. The courses are always really hard, especially for us, the Giro this year. It's the first year RCS is actually taking it on with organization, which, I mean, I know they don't always get the, they don't always have the best reputation, but I think for us, it's a really good thing for the race. We've already seen the professionalism a step up, and I think it's a really exciting course this year. I think they're really taking us seriously. For example, the second last day we'll be racing up the Blockhouse Climb, which many will know from the men's Giro. I think that stage has over 4,000 meters of climbing. We do Passo Anziano twice and then finish up Blockhouse. I think we're getting harder races, really nicely run tour. And from an Australian perspective too, I think we start with a 15-kilometer time trial. I think Grace Brown is starting, so for everyone watching at home, I think it's a great opportunity that maybe we'll even get an Australian in the Maglia Rosa.
Yeah, that'd be beautiful. Interesting fact actually here, because it's again something we talked about, but do you feel as a rider that the fact that the Tour de France entered the game of the Grand Tours for you, on the women's side of the sport, did that change the game? Did that change the equation of how the year is scheduled, but also how other Grand Tours like the Giro and the RCS going into that game as well? Did that change the whole rule book?
Yes, I think definitely. I think we see, I mean, the Tour de France came on the calendar and straight away it was the biggest race on our calendar. It's the one that everyone wanted to start in. It's the one with the most pressure. Everyone wants to win a stage. Everyone wants to do something in the Tour de France. And we saw straight away the crowds came out. There was a bit of, I don't know, not concern, but just curiosity about, okay, how many how many people are going to come out and watch it, and we're all pleasantly surprised. So it's heading into its third year this year, and it already has a huge backing, and it is the biggest race. And I think what that did for women's cycling and for races is it made races like the Giro really, RCS saw, I think, the impact the Tour de France Femme has had on the sport, and they really wanted to invest in that and now bring up a really nice race like what we have this year. Same with the Vuelta a España. We've seen that really within the space of 3-4 years, it's gone from a one day, then 2 day, then 3 day tour, now into a proper 8 day tour. And I'm a bit involved behind the scenes with Cyclist Alliance, with the CPA group. So I see some of the messages coming through, and I know that these tours are also trying to push to have more days now in the future. So I think it's really pushing these sort of tours to increase in visibility, sponsorship, in course structure, and really are trying to make themselves the biggest race. So I think that's been a good thing. I think it's going to be interesting as far as the calendar goes in terms of the Giro. I think the Giro is lucky in a way this year because the Tour de France Femme is in August after the Olympics, whereas the last 2 years we've seen it sort of the Giro 1 week and then the Tour de France. So I think in the future this could be a problem, so it'll be interesting to see sort of if the Giro shifts in the calendar or how they end up negotiating that, I think.
Yeah, maybe it could be the start of something big in a way. RCS can actually start talking to ASO and vice versa, and on something constructive. I'm not saying they don't talk to each other, but let's be constructive.
Well, if that's the outcome, then I think no one will complain about that. We know they're not always the best. They're the best of friends, so that would be a fantastic outcome.
Yeah, like for people I really don't know, I can't speak of it because I'm actually part heritage Italian and also French as well. But like, it's a bit like the New Zealand Australian relationship. You know, there's a love hate with Italy, and don't put a round ball football in between because there's no love. There's only hate. So
that's a good way of putting it, actually.
Let's rewind back on the Vuelta. You're reminding me of something. So he started in Valencia, a beautiful city. I'm in love with Valencia for multiple reasons, but I just love that city. That last 100 or 200 meters for you after the crash, the way that you had to really quickly jump back onto your mindset saying, oh, we can still get that win and get that lead. Can you describe how it was?
To be honest, that was probably the calmest stage we had in the end for the whole Vuelta. Quite calm. And then we were coming into the final, and then it started to rain a bit. And to those that don't know, around Valencia, they don't get a lot of rain normally, and a lot of cars on the roads, a lot of roundabouts. And basically, as soon as it starts raining in that region, the roads, they become like ice, like an ice rink. And we all know that. But, we as cyclists, as racers, we put on a different kind of brain when it comes to the last 3K. We know it, but we still want to race and try to get the win. And we just had roundabout after roundabout, first roundabout, massive crash, second roundabout, massive crash into the last corner. Another crash. We know it's the last 3K, so if you are caught up in the crash, then you get the bunch time, but they are pretty strict around this, so you can't sort of pretend and then hope for the best. So yeah, I mean, I remember I was guiding Elisa Longo-Boogie in that last 3K in my job. I knew I had her on my wheel. I knew my job was to deliver her into the final in a safe position, and it was just this incredible feeling, like we went around a roundabout and there's just bodies and bikes kind of like parting ways, and we just managed to get through, and then the same on the next roundabout, and then I'm in the radio screaming, is she there, I'm not there. So there's a bit of panic, but still trying to be calm and work out where your teammate is. And yeah, I mean, in the end we managed to get to the finish, but it was just like this, you get to the finish line and everyone's just like, oh, like just a massive sense of relief. And then you're wondering what happened to your teammate, because I think Lizzie crashed, we weren't sure about Gaia, and it's just this sort of like manic moment where you're trying to account for everyone. Is everyone okay? Did we lose time? It's almost like happening in slow motion at the time, and you're just trying to, it's like being in a video game almost, seeing if you can get through and one after the other. And I mean, that was a crazy way to finish a stage.
I was watching it on TV and it was crazy to watch, so you can only imagine what it was from the inside. Before we talk about your next objective, the Tour de France, the Olympics and so on, let's talk about Little Trek a little bit. The team, for me, from the outside, it looks like it really grew in size, but grew in maturity in the last 2-3 years since you came as well. The whole team, okay, there's more money, there's more of everything, but it's the tactical aspect of the team. You guys have matured a lot, and you got help for someone like Koen De Kort, for example, and all these how is it from the inside of that team? Am I right in thinking so? Is that your same reading for
you? Yeah, I definitely think so. And I think I joined it at a really exciting time. Lidl came on board, and for sure the budget went up. And then we also grew in size. Like, we have 19 riders on the roster this year. We have, I think the team's done a really good job. We have 5 18-year-olds. And then, yeah, people like me who are double the age of our 18-year-olds, who they like to remind me of that sometimes. yeah, so I think it's a really nice mix of young riders, experienced riders, winners, leaders, that kind of thing. So I think that's really helped in a way. And I think for me, we also have Jeroen Blijlevens came on board as a director this year alongside Ina Teutenberg. So we just have such a wealth of knowledge within the director group as well, which I think has been a real positive thing. And for me as well, I think the team really values every single role a rider has. And we have all the riders, every race, everyone has a really clear role and everyone believes in our leaders. And we have fantastic leaders, people like Elisa Longo-Borghini, Elisa Balsamo. We've seen our younger riders like Shuren Van Anroy, Guy Raymini really step up in the last couple of years too, which has been really special. And I think for me on a personal level, like, I'm just at a point in my career where I know I've won some races in the past, but I'm also really relishing this role. Like, for example, I've been the road captain a lot more this year. Last year when I joined the team, it was my first year and I kind of stepped away from that role after having done it at Green Edge. But this year it's been a role that I've taken on a lot more. And it's been, yeah, nice to kind of be in that role again. I'm not always a leader, but I'm a road captain working for our younger riders. And for me, it's been really rewarding at the end of stages when Shirin or Bartzi come up and say, oh, you're so calm in the race and it's really nice having you as the captain, or just nice to race alongside you and the work you did. And for me, that's been really rewarding. And I think it's just been kind of a transition, I guess, in my career as well about, okay, I'm not always going to be the one winning the races now, but how can I give up? And I think for me, that's on a personal level, that's been really nice to realize that, especially this year. Because to be honest, it has been something I've struggled a little bit in the last couple of years coming back from my injury. And I guess the idea of what does success look like for me now. And for a while there, I thought the only way I could ever be successful again after my surgery is if I win a race. But actually, there are so many ways to be successful and to be valuable in a team. And so that's been a little bit of a, not a cliched word as a journey, but just a nice realization, I think, that I can still be there and still fight for the win. But it's also really, really rewarding to be part of this team where everyone's really valued and we're really fighting for wins and using different tactics. And it's really ambitious. We want to win every race. We want to be the best team in the world. And that's really motivating to be part of a team like that, where everybody believes that we're getting the best equipment. You know, we're on this altitude training camp. We have a bunch of staff here supporting us. So I'm really like targeted towards specific goals. So yeah, that was a long answer, but it's just been, yeah, I think it has really stepped up in the last couple of years for sure. And it's really special to be a part of.
Does that make you think a bit more about what's coming after? I mean, you probably, and I'll, you know, I'm nice. I'm trying to say, well, you know, you're not thinking about retirement, but you've got the biggest part of your career behind you, not ahead of you. Let's put it this way. Does that make you think, you know, if I take your words, when you say, you can win differently, you don't have to win, and you can be part of the win differently. Is that something that you're thinking, maybe the future for you after racing is as a DS, as a part of a staff, do you still want to still be in cycling, or do you actually block this out at the minute because there's so many more races, so many more things to think about, and it's not something you want to think about now?
Yeah, I think a bit of both. And I think, you know, that's sort of been the process over the last year or so, is like also thinking, okay, what could come next? And It's something that I do speak to my agent about. We I can tell you, I'm not going to be retiring at the end of this year. News will come out when it's ready, but I'm definitely going to continue. But it's definitely something that I think about. Where do I want to be after I do finish my career, which will come, yeah, sooner rather than later. But I want to stay involved in the sport. Yep. As I said before, I've kind of grown up in the sport. It's a real passion for me. I love it. And I think as well, I've been doing it I've been overseas racing since I was 18. And I think the early days of women's cycling, you weren't doing it for the money, you weren't doing it for anything. You were doing it because you loved the sport. And so I think a lot of the riders you see that have been racing for that long, we are genuinely passionate about it. It would have been too hard to do it if you didn't have that genuine love of the sport. So I think for sure, possibly directing, coaching, or just being involved in a capacity, even in the media, and being able to go to races, cover races. Or even I really, really enjoy working with younger riders as well and being a bit of a mentor. And that's a role that I have within our team here on Lidl Trek. So that's another thing I really enjoy, is seeing these amazing young riders. Like, as I mentioned earlier, we have 5 18-year-olds on the team, and I had the pleasure of racing with Bella Holmgren and Fleur Moores in Itzulia, and just seeing, I mean, Fleur came fifth in the first stage. Bella was almost climbing with Demi Vollering. And they just don't know how good they are or how amazing that is. So I just, you know, this young innocence, not even, they're incredible. They don't know how incredible they are yet. But that's exciting to be a part of and be involved with.
Yeah, I've got some in my team as well at the same, but I don't tell them too much. You know, you never know.
Yeah, that's maybe a better thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we talk about the Tour de France, let's talk about Elisa. So Elisa, I don't know if it's official or not, and the rumor is that she's leaving the team. Does that, man, I know you probably can't talk too much about it, and I appreciate this, but does that change the focus on it this year, or does that make you want to just basically win everything you can for her, or she wants to win everything she can for the team? What's the state of mind at the minute in the team?
Yeah, her? Like, I know, yeah, we've all read it in the news that it's rumored that she's leaving the team. And yeah, I mean, for me, it's always the rider's news to share, and I'm sure she'll share what her future plans are when she has the chance. But I mean, I know Elisa really well. I've spent a lot of time together now, and there's one thing I know about her, is that no matter what her future plans are, then she's really in the here and in the now, right now. And she's going to, we're not thinking about next year, about what's happening. We're really focused on this year, mm-hmm. and we all really believe in her and what she can do. And as I mentioned, we're here now at altitude camp in San Pellegrino, really preparing towards the Giro, especially. She'll add the GC there. So we're really preparing towards that goal. And she's just such a racer. I mean, every time she wears this jersey, she's going to be racing and racing really hard. So no, we're not really focusing on what, that there might be changes and that kind of thing. And to be honest, I think next year we're going to see the biggest shakeup in the women's team and teams that we've ever seen. I think a lot of people have contracts through Olympic years and then they sort of change. So I think whether Elise is leaving or whatever, we're going to see across the board, you're going to be watching racing next year, I think, and have to kind of remind yourself where everyone is again.
Totally agree. Okay, let's talk about the Paris Olympics. What's the target for you?
Well, to be honest, I'm not sure that I will be selected this year for the Olympics. I've kind of
come on.
No, I think if I'm completely honest, unfortunately, Australia, we didn't have the best year last year, and we only have three spots for the team. So we have, obviously, Grace will be there, and I mean, I'm not a selector, but if I had to select, then I think a rider like Ruby Rose McGannell, she's our current national champion. She would have been our leader at Worlds last year, but she got COVID. So I think she's really proven herself. I think my Lidl Trek teammate, Loretta Hansen, has had a really, really strong and consistent last 12 months. So I think those three riders especially could really deserve a place in the Olympic team. So I think it's really tricky when you get to Olympics and we have so few spots. And I know the course itself is probably not hard enough for me on a personal level. I mean, I know I can be valuable in every team, but I think it's probably suited more to the cobbled classics type, shorter, really punchy riders. So I don't know if I'm going to fit within that kind of strategy. I think when we would have four riders, I think that kind of changes the game. It allows you to have someone there as a road captain, a bit more experience. So I'm not sure. I think the selectors would do a good job, but yeah, I think I'm also being like realistic about it. And I think it's not a course like we had in Rio where there's this massive climb and it's like, yep, okay, that's a course for me, or even in Tokyo was the same. So I think it's a much more open kind of course than whether they take a track rider as well to sort of fill a spot. So I think all will be revealed in the next 2 weeks, I think it is.
Yeah, it's coming very soon. If on a personal level, how does that sit with you if you have to miss out of the Olympics? You've been an Olympian at heart. You know, a good part of your athlete life has been around the Olympics.
Yeah.
Let's face it. How does that sit with you?
It's been interesting. I think if I look back to the last Olympic cycles, I was obsessed about the Olympics. That was my focus. Like, okay, going to bed every night thinking about the Olympics. Olympics, Olympics, Olympics. Whereas I feel like coming into this year, and I think, again, like the Tour de France Femme, having bigger races on the calendar in general has kind of changed my mindset a little bit. in that I have come into this season not with a sole focus on the Olympics. I've come into this season thinking, okay, Australia, I want to go really well, like Ardennes, Vuelta. I really want to be at the Tour de France Femme. The World Championships in Zurich are a really nice course. So I've actually come into the year with all these different goals in an Olympic year. And actually, it feels nice. I feel calmer in general. I'm not obsessing over one race. And yeah, it's, I just have more of a sense of calmness around it. And being realistic as well, I know that I haven't had, results wise, I haven't had the biggest year. I'm definitely more in a worker role so far this season, and that's fine. As I mentioned, I'm really loving that. So I think I would really like to be in the team, but if I'm not, then that's also okay, because I think we have really strong lines that deserve to be in the team as well. And I think it's something culture wise as a national team, we met in January and we kind of spoke about this concept. But I mean, I've seen in Olympic years where people go crazy for Olympics and friendships are broken and this kind of thing, but in the end we can only take three riders in the team, and the selectors will pick the three best riders. And if you're not selected, it doesn't mean that you're not a valued member of the Australian team, and it doesn't mean that you won't get selected for Worlds. In the end, cycling's a sport where courses can play a big role in team selection as well. So, yeah, if you're a climber, then probably you're not going to be in the Paris Olympic team, but come the Worlds, then that's a different story. So I think, yeah, it's just, for me, I've just come in with a lot more of a calm approach, and probably having the Tour de France straight afterwards as well. That's a big focus. So I think that also, I have a focus immediately after what would have been the Paris Olympics.
Can we call this maturity from you?
I think, yeah, I think finally I've matured.
Is it scary? Is it scary to call it maturity?
I know, I call myself an ancient warrior sometimes compared to my 18-year-old teammates who are half my age. But no, I think it is a sense of maturity. And I think maybe, yes, I've been to three Olympic Games before, so maybe it's a bit unfair. Not unfair, but maybe it is why I can be a bit more level-headed around it. I know that my teammates or people that have not been to Olympics, I'm not taking away at all that how massive an accomplishment it is to be an Olympian and to be able to represent your country. And I'm certainly not taking anything away from that. I would love to be there in Paris, don't get me wrong. But yeah, I think it's just, it is a maturity, I think, and an understanding that, yeah, it's not everyone can be there. And sometimes someone just has had a better season and deserves it and fits in with the team strategy more. And that's just something you have to be able to accept.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about Tour de France.
Uh-huh.
Are you dreaming of that finish at the Alpe d'Huez? I mean, there's a lot of road to ride until now and then. But that finish as an epic finish, we know how epic it was last year with the weather turning on and so on. And you and I actually had a chat on a finish line that was actually lovely that day. But how much are you looking forward for this Tour de France? And that, again, that finish that can actually be epic as well.
Yeah, I think it's incredible that we're finishing up outdoors the same way I thought it was incredible with the Tourmalet, that we as a women's peloton, women's cycling, we're getting to race up these really iconic climbs. Like outdoors, I think everyone knows outdoors in the cycling world. I mean, my dad's ridden up there and he has his personal best time up outdoors, so he'll be able to compare. Sorry, Dad, but you know how much faster we are.
Compare or brag? Compare or brag? What are you going to do?
He can brag until we race up there and then probably just compare.
Yeah.
He can just compare. But no, I think it's just incredible that we get to race up there again, a climb with so much history. I'm really curious. I really hope we have like Dutch Corner, for example. I mean, I'm sure we will have the Dutch Corner, and just the fans up that climb, it's going to be incredible. I think we also start in the Netherlands. I think such a huge cycling nation, that's going to be incredible. I'm a bit scarred about the fact that we have a double stage day, so that feels a bit like,
is it actually a bit scary to think about how bonkers it can actually be, because we know how popular cycling in general is in the Netherlands and how successful the Dutch riders have been at this event, the Tour de France Femmes. Is it a bit, you know, mind-blowing to think this is going to start in the streets of Rotterdam for 2 days?
Yeah, it's going to be, I think, incredible. And we know there could be windy, it's pancake flat, it's going to be hectic, it's going to be stressful. As I mentioned, we have two stages in one day. So I think it's a 6K time trial. And then in the afternoon, we have a 60K road race, which is just going to be bonkers. I think my heart started racing thinking about that stage, because it's just going to be on, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the Netherlands, we moved down into Belgium, and I think it's stage 3 or stage 4, where we actually race the last 50 kilometers is a carbon copy of Liège-Bastogne-Liège. So we kind of race again over those historic roads. And so I think, again, the course is a really, really good one where hopefully the Maillot Jaune is kind of passed over several times and we're really not going to know the winner until the very final stage. So again, it's a really nice parkour. And I'm curious, I don't know, Christophe, what you think about the fact that we have the men's Tour de France, we have the Paris Olympics, and then we move into the women's Tour de France Femme, if there might be a bit of sport fatigue amongst the French, or if they're still going to be out cheering us on, or what do you think?
I think it's going to be okay because it's a long run and there's the Vuelta for men as well, straight after you, overlaps with the Tour de France Femme.
Okay.
So I hope there's no fatigue.
Okay. All right. Then I'm feeling better.
I am personally excited about the start in the Netherlands. I've been to the Netherlands. I know how crazy mad they can be about cycling, and how much they love the femme event. They just love women cycling. They absolutely love it. And of course, they've got a superstar there as well. So this is shaping up to be even potentially more interesting than the last two editions of the Tour de France. I think this is really, you know, talked about a bit of a maturity, you and I, in this podcast. Yeah. The race is gaining maturity and it could be bonkers all across the 8 days of the race.
Yeah, I think so. And I think you're right. I mean, if we think to the races we have in the Netherlands, like the Amstel Gold Race, which is just crazy with crowds already there after the Kalberg. And I think they are such a cycling nation. You've really seen Jamie Vollering grow and grow and grow in popularity as a result of her Tour de France term win. Lorena Wiebes is going to be targeting those first stages as well. So they really have some big Dutch superstars for the locals to come out and cheer on. And the thing I like about Netherlands and Belgium is you always hear a lot of Australian fans in the crowd when we're there as well. I think it's kind of a lot of expats living in the area and they really come out and get behind the cycling. And there's nothing better than racing along and hearing someone yell at your name in an Australian accent. It's just this moment where you're like, you feel like it's someone you know just because it doesn't happen that often. But yeah, you kind of claim it and think, oh yeah, they definitely know me. But that's always a nice feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, it's been a fantastic pleasure to talk to you. I know you've got a lot of training to do in between the next time you and I meet, which probably will be at the Tour de France. So a lot of altitude training, a lot of hard racing as well. But one last question, I guess, is what would be a fantastic year for you? What would make, because we know cycling is probably one of the most ungrateful sports that exists. When you think about it, you guys train 300 days a year and a top 10 sometimes can actually make your season, you know, but what would be a successful season for you?
I think a successful season would be being a part of a Giro stage win, a Giro GC podium. The same goes for the Tour de France. I personally would really love to get a top 3 in a race. That would be a stage win. This would be an amazing result. If I could, I haven't had a win in quite a few years now. So if I could put my arms in the air in any race for the rest of the season, that would be my season complete. And I'm looking towards the World Championships in Zurich. I think that's a nice, good, hard course where I'd really like to represent Australia and have a really strong race.
Yeah, we watch you very closely, Sprati, and hopefully we'll see you at the Tour de France Femme in August. Thank you.
Perfect. Thanks, Christophe.